5. Nate worked at a magazine in Hollywood. Not the shining steel and glass Hollywood always seen on television, though. The part he worked in had rattling elevators, no air conditioning, and 10-year-old computers. The magazine was the same, not A-list, but solidly in the B's. He knew it had something to do with movies and celebrities, or maybe the different crew people behind the scenes, but truth be told, he'd never been interested enough to pick up an issue and read it. He'd stumbled into the data entry job and had been doing it for almost 2 years now. He was technically a part-time temp, but his bosses always pushed to get 40 hours a week out of him. The idea of actually hiring him full-time had never been brought up by either side. This was an unspoken understanding. It was a mindless way to earn $9.25 an hour. The magazine sent out thousands of mailers, flyers, and sample issues every month, and a fair share of them came back in white mail crates, bundled together in packets of 100 or more. His job was to compare the addresses to ones in the database and determine whether they were current or flagged for non-delivery. The catch was that the database grew by 100 names or more every week, some of which were just the same clients being listed under a new entry. Plus, each week brought another crate or two of returns to his cubicle. The cubicles defined the company in so many ways. They were bulky partitions salvaged from the offices of a bigger company when it went belly up. Each oversized wall and its base took up so much space that the room was a model of inefficiency. Ann and Zach, the other two semi-permanent temps, had to turn sideways to get into their cubicles. Jimmy, the office intern, had to climb over chairs to get to his. Nate only raided the cubicle by the door because nobody wanted to wrestle the mail crates into one of the others. He reached for another bundle of returns and heard a sigh behind him. He tried not to flinch.
"I tried to call you last night," said Eddie. Eddie was the worst sort of employer. He thought he was a generous, fair man with a firm grasp of business. He was actually a tightwad middle manager with few good ideas who micromanaged everyone. Nate had worked in the office for 2 weeks when he was given a long speech about how he wasn't applying himself and meeting expected quotas. He'd countered with some very simple math and shown how Eddie's expectations were impossible for anyone to achieve. His boss had stood there staring at him and then wandered away. 3 days later, he'd come back to moan about how he'd expected the whole project to be done the week before. There was a shuffle of chairs as Zach and Ann leaned out to see if they were Eddie's chosen focus today. Once they realized his gaze was on Nate, they slipped back into their own cubicles.
"Sorry," said Nate. "What's up?"
"Why didn't you answer your cell phone?"
"It never rang."
"I called 3 times, said Eddie.
Nate felt a moment of relief and annoyance at the same time. If something was important enough to call 3 times on a Wednesday night, Eddie would have been down in Nate's cubicle first thing Thursday morning, not late in the afternoon. He'd called for something petty, been annoyed he couldn't get through, and only remembered his annoyance after lunch.
"I guess I was in a dead spot," said Nate. He focused on the new bundle of return slips and peeled off the rubber band. "We're in the middle of Los Angeles, and you're trying to tell me you couldn't get a cell phone signal?"
"I bet it's my new place," said Nate after a moment's thought. He shrugged. "The walls are all brick and plaster. I think it doubles as a bomb shelter. When war breaks out, you can all hide out at my place." He heard a quick snort of laughter from Anne's cubicle. She was the one bright spot in the office. She was another temp like him, with the cheekbones, eyes, and body of a model. Her hair stretched down to her waist. Anne had been at the office for 8 months now. Eddie huffed out more air to make sure Nate knew how inconvenient this was.
"Make sure they get your new phone number upstairs," he said.
"As soon as I have one," said Nate. The oversized man wandered back into the hall without ever saying what he'd called for. Nate looked back at his screen. At least the day wasn't ending on a down note. Nate could get to work faster from his new place, but Sean had been proven right. He'd cut 15 minutes off his travel time, but spent 20 minutes every night looking for parking when he got home. Instead of making his job more bearable, it added to the frustration he felt. He usually ended up parking almost a block and a half away. As he walked down the hill toward his apartment, he spotted a young woman with bright blue hair leaving the building. He'd already identified a few of his neighbors. He'd seen Oscar twice, both times out on the sidewalk. The old man did most of his shopping at the two markets at the end of the street.
There was also a curvy woman and a ginger-headed man close to Nate's age who walked with the practiced synchronization of a longtime couple. None of them seemed to notice him. There'd been no more sightings of the farmer's daughter, blonde, who lived across the hall. He slipped through the gate and tried to find the security door key on his key ring as he walked up the steps. Something flashed sunlight in his eyes and he glanced to his left. From this angle, he could see between some of the shrubbery in the bottom of the building. At the far corner was an old-fashioned cornerstone of glossy rock. Nate stepped down the stairs and onto the small lawn. He could see the lines where rows of sod had been laid out. A few steps carried him to the corner of the building. A large shrub grew there. He bent a few branches out of the way until the symbols there were revealed. The cornerstone was a solid block of marble shot through with dark veins and a few flecks of sparkling stone. The numbers and letters were carved almost half an inch deep. 1894. W-N-A-P-T-K. Nate wasn't sure how much information was supposed to be on a cornerstone, but he felt let down by how little was on this one. A few minutes later, he was upstairs and tossing his bag onto the couch. He usually changed into casual clothes after work, but he had nothing clean. In fact, he'd brought a half-full hamper of dirty clothes from his old apartment. Thursday night, it seemed, would be centered around checking out the building's laundry room. Clothes and quarters were gathered, a bottle of detergent was stuffed in the top of the hamper, and he lugged the whole thing down the back stairwell to the basement. There were 8 machines in the laundry room. 4 washers stood in a line against the concrete wall opposite the door. The dryers were set in 2 stacks of 2. Opposite the dryers was a battered couch with a man sprawled on it. The man had his hands up covering his eyes, more in a gesture of mild frustration than any sort of protection. His solid arms and broad chest were the kind that came from constant labor, not days at the gym. He wasn't much taller than Nate, 1 or 2 at the most. Nate was aware, though, of the difference between being 5'10 and being 6 feet tall. It was far more than just 2 inches. As Nate shuffled in with his hamper, the man lowered his hands and revealed at least 2 days' worth of stubble.
"Hey,"
he said.
"Hey,"
echoed Nate. "Long day?"
"They're all long,"
he sighed with a grin.
"Forgot to do laundry over the weekend. Now I need shirts and socks, and I've got an early call tomorrow."
"That sucks."
"Yeah. Don't use the washer on the left. Never spins fast enough so everything comes out wet.
Really wet, not damp."
"Thanks,"
said Nate.
"No worries."
"You new?"
"Yeah.
Just moved into 28 last weekend."
"Right,"
said the man.
"So your pickup with the desk and the shelves and stuff."
"Friend's pickup, but yeah."
"Yeah,"
he said. He pointed up at the edge where the wall and ceiling joined.
"Roger. I live right there. Number 7.
"I'm Nate. You been here long?"
"A little over 1 year."
The dryer chimed and went silent. Roger dragged himself off the couch and slouched to the machine with his olive drab pillow. It unfolded into a tall rucksack. Nate flicked his eyes to the building above them.
"You like it?"
"What's not to like?"
He shrugged as he shoved laundry into his bag.
"Work a 65-70-hour week. Weekends I run errands or go out. This is where I sleep and keep my stuff, and it's cheap."
70-hour work week?
"Local 40, bro,"
Roger said.
"Grip."
"Like in the movies?"
"Yep. 7 years.
Nate grinned. "What the hell does a grip do, anyway?"
"Grips are the hammers, man. Set flags, build platforms, keep everything safe."
"Flags?" Roger smiled.
"Think of it this way. Electricians are in charge of the lights, we're in charge of the shadows."
He tossed a few last t-shirts in the sack.
"Have a good night, bro."
"You too." Roger clomped up the stairs and Nate was alone in the laundry room. He packed the last of his clothes into the washer and fished 2 quarters out of his jeans. 50 cents for a load of laundry was almost as surreal as his rent. Water hissed inside the machine. He wandered back into the hall. Right across from the laundry room doorway was a door. It was rust red with long inset panels, not the flat faces the apartment doors had. A hasp had been screwed into the doorframe just above the knob, and a gleaming master lock hung from it. He strolled down the hall. A bare bulb threw harsh light everywhere. The floor was painted the same blue as the laundry room, but just past the bulb the paint ended, and it was bare concrete. Behind the laundry room was a smaller room, maybe the size of his studio, filled with water heaters. They were squat, can-like things that reached his hip, not so much arranged in the room as shoved into it. Most of them were bone-colored, although two chalk-white ones stood against the far wall. Nate could see energy-efficient stickers on several of them. A faint haze of warm steam hung in the air. He heard a rustling noise. A cockroach with a body as long as his ring finger scurried up onto one of the heaters. It was a bright green Rochosaurus, the granddaddy of the one he'd seen in his apartment that first day. Its tiny claws pinged and scraped on the metal surface. It was always wrong when the pests got so big you could hear them walking. A mental image rose up in his mind, Sigourney Weaver as Ripley standing in a misty room of alien eggs. Nate stepped away from the cluster of heaters. The hall ended at a set of double doors. He looked behind him and guessed he was close to the front of the building. The elevator shaft was probably right on the other side of the doors. Like the door across from the laundry room, these didn't match the rest of the building. These were elegant doors, the kind of doors that used to lead into ballrooms or penthouse suites in old hotels. They had a bar across them, the way Bugs Bunny would block a door. The dusty wood just looked like a perfectly straight 2x4. A length of chain looped around the bar 3 or 4 times and also threaded itself twice through the door handles. Nate stepped out of the light and peered at the padlock that held the ends of the chain. It was a huge, solid-looking block with a loop almost as thick as his finger. Lock and chain were both covered with bright orange rust, faded to dirt brown in places. He could see a few flecks of steel gleaming through here and there. If he had to guess, he'd say no one had opened the lock in at least 20 years. He set his finger against the left-hand door. It was warm, warmer than the air in the hall. He gave a little push. Between the bar and the chains, the doors were locked solid. It was like pushing on the wall. Back down the hall, he heard his washer spin into high gear. "This concludes our exploration of the cellar," he thought to himself.